about whole image data connection. I will define what is large scale a bit later in the talk. So in case somebody did not see this picture from Wikipedia, this is magnetic reconnection. So X point is in the center. And so this is where magnetic fields changing topology. And then the material outflows. So one of the aspects of magnetic reconnection is changing topology of the field lines, but another aspect is that the fluid from top and the bottom are mixing. So if you take like some points here, they can end up anywhere here. So the fluid is mixing. And this would be like a more general definition of reconnection that I will be using, because I will be using pretty, I will be considering a pretty messy picture when there's a lot of X points and there's no way to track all of them. So somehow it's black and white, supposed to be bluish. But one reason people are interested in reconnection.
One color is not working, so you put in. Try HDMI then. Yeah, this was one of them should be red.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, is that how reconnection is?
Can you switch to HDMI then?
Well, if you have an adapter, yeah.
Oh.
So there is no HDMI in.
It's the wrong one, yeah.
No, it's not that.
No, it's another one. Yeah, I think this thing is broken.
I guess it's fine. Black and white.
Is that red on the screen? Is that what you're saying?
It's bluish, but it's fine. Yeah, let's continue.
Oh, I see.
It's a SDO image.
All the good stuff is not working.
Some wire is not working.
Anyway, so let's black and white.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll just talk to you.
So people figured out that this X-ray flares actually comes not from the solar surface, but from above the solar surface. And above the solar surface, at this altitude, there's almost no plasma. There's just magnetic energy, so it has to come from magnetic energy, this energy. So apparently there's something is going on this magnetic field. And we know that it's the change of topology because of this coronal mass ejections. So after the X-ray flare, usually there's a huge outflow. And this indicates that a magnetic field is in a different state, has a different ground state. So now it is trying to relax to this different ground state because the topology have changed. Now it's interesting that the same process happens not only on large scales like this, but people observe small scale reconnection on smaller scales closer to the solar surface. And it appear to have the same features like outflows of material and so on. So this is process that is roughly scale free on the sun, although observed quantities are not very well constrained, but you can assume that it is scale free process. So it is associated with various energetic events. So electrons are accelerated. There is radiation from electrons from the X point itself, and there is radiation from these foot points where the magnetic field is entering the sun. So electrons just fly across this field lines and hit the sun and produce X-rays. Now I was saying X point, but actually this is so-called Y point reconnection. So you see the Y here. So the point is that the current sheet is actually pretty long. It is of order of 50 megameters or something. And when reconnection happens, there is this the outflow happens in this direction, but the original configuration is a very long current sheet. We don't know how thin it is, but it's very long. And in astrophysics, people has been hypothesizing that there's current sheets, thin current sheets, although they are not directly observed. So for example, in the pulsar magnetosphere, there's a return current. There's a current launched in the open field lines, and there's a return current. And in some simulations, people see that it's thinning out and becomes current layer. In jets, when you have a jet and a cocoon, in principle, in order to support the magnetic pressure, if there's an outside pressure and there's magnetic pressure from this side, you will form a current layer because, you know, magnetic field abruptly changes to zero. So in principle, we would expect current layers in astrophysics as well. Unfortunately, they are not directly observed. So first, let me talk about reconnection in MHZ. Hopefully, everybody knows what MHZ is. A resistive MHZ. Let's define Lundquist number, which is essentially dimensionless conductivity of the fluid. If it's very, very large, then the fluid can be considered ideally conducting, and magnetic field is almost ideally frozen in. I did not put these models in chronological order because I believe that the first important point is the Serovatsky's model. So he was saying, let's just look at the current layer as a discontinuity, and then if you allow the infinite velocity outflow along the current layer, then you can have arbitrary reconnection rate in this configuration. So of course, people did not believe infinite outflows, and before Serovatsky, there was Sweet Parker's model, where they also considered thin current sheets, but in resistive MHZ, and that they were saying if you take resistivity to zero, then the reconnection rate will go to zero. So basically, everybody ignored this because they thought that this paper resolved this uncertainty about reconnection rate, that it's actually zero in teleconducting plasmas. But as I show later, this is probably not the case. And there's also a turbulent reconnection model. So what it does, it says that we are not actually interested in microscales. We will look at turbulent scales, inertial range, and then we will argue that there is a sort of turbulent diffusivity that makes magnetic field lines wander and reconnect. So the microscopic reconnection is of no interest to us, just like microscopic dissipation does not affect most of the turbulent cascade. So this model does not depend on Lundquist number because there's simply no, it's not included in the model, but it depends on the level of turbulence. So it's proportional to Alvenic Mach number squared. Okay, so just to have some idea how conductive plasma is, on the Sun, its Lundquist number is around 10 to the 14. So the Sweet Parker's model will predict reconnection time scales of 10 to the 7 Alvenic times. And what is observed is more like 10 or 100 Alvenic times. So, of course, plasma is not resistive MHZ, but nevertheless, you can see that Sweet Parker's model does not predict any appreciable reconnection rate. So, first of all, people figured out that Sweet Parker's current layers are unstable, and therefore, when you go to high Lundquist numbers, it's no longer, the formula no longer applies. So instead, you have Tirian instability, and then there is this formation of plasmoids and ejection of plasmoids, and this effectively gives you a constant reconnection rate. And I also did some simulations in 3D, and basically reconnection rate in 2D and 3D are approximately the same. But what's interesting is that in plasma simulations, whole MHZ simulations and peak simulations, the connection rate is higher. So in MHD is 1.5%, in whole MHD and plasma is between 10% and 3%. So what is the reconnection rate in nature? And this is where I explain what is the large scale. So large scale is, for example, 50 megameters on the sun, which is much, much larger than any resistive scales or plasma scales that we have here. So here the box size is 70 ion skin depths, and on the sun it's more like you need to have at least 10 to the 4 ion skin depths. So key questions. So back in the day, people ask this question very often: is reconnection fast? So the rate is independent on the scale separation between your scale of the current layer and microscales. Now we're pretty much sure that it's fast, because it's fast in MHD and plasma and so on. So for infinite Lundquist numbers, Witt Parker gives you zero rate, but we now understand that for the infinite Lundquist number, this model does not apply. So yes, probably reconnection is fast. So is reconnection determined by plasma effects? For example, there's some fiducial value of 0.1 VA in electron-positron plasmas. So the plasma effects make it fast, but the question still is this plasma effects, do they propagate to larger scales? So when you deal with very, very large current layers, do they have the same reconnection rate as determined by microscales or not? So the layer width, when you have inflow and outflow, the observed reconnection rate is about this value, and this gives you certain minimum thickness of the current layer, which is determined by the conditions that the material has to get out of the way. So if you estimate this layer width from observations, it is 10 to the 4 di. So it is far, far larger than any plasma scale. So we have this. I have the observed rate, and I have the length of the layer, which is 50 megameters. So I multiply 50 megameters by this, and I estimate di, and I take this ratio between the width and the eye.
Please assume a large scale current sheet, so there it will be like lamina, like kind of Witt Parker like steady state, and the
well, I mean, you can argue that it would look something like this. So there's some special point where you can argue that it goes to plasma scales, but for most of the layer. So I would be arguing that reconnection actively happens everywhere. So this is this, which is 0.1 of the length, and the length is 50 megameters. Let's do it 1% of value. So still, this is the very, very large compared to any plasma scales. And so I would even argue that maybe the material, stuck in here and form current layer like this.
Yeah, it's a possibility, but let's say, I don't believe it will be 2D in the sun, the reconnection, but even in 2D, you can have plasmoids, and actually, you don't need to be so thick.
I will not be talking about beliefs or, I will be showing you some simulations, but this is just some questions. So do outflow collide and produce turbulence? So when you have a single X point, that's fine. You have inflow, outflow, but how does it, how does this picture propagate to larger scales? What prevent current layer to have several X points? Because they do not, like if you have very, very thin current layer, you can form X points everywhere at the same time, because they're separated by a time scale. So if you have X point.
Yeah, my point is that I want to say that the layer width 10 to the 4 di is not a requirement.
It is a requirement because you have to get rid of material. So we know that the outflow speed is about Alvenic speed. The inflow speed is this. That therefore the ratio between the length and the width.
But I think the problem here is when you call it a layer. It doesn't have to be a layer. It could be a region where you have a whole bunch of island-like structures. So I think that's the problem in terms of what you're saying. So I mean, I think everybody agrees that somehow there has to be some broad region where stuff is coming out, whether you want to call that a layer.
Okay. So I'm entitled to some artistic license. And okay. when you call it a region, I call it a layer.
Okay, fine.
So there is this X point, and because of nonlinearities, as Sasha told us yesterday, it collapses into the thin current sheet. How this process happens exactly, I'm not going to discuss. There has been some talks by Matthew, for example. But suppose there's this thin current sheet, it is God-given, and then it develops some sort of instability and becomes turbulent. Now, as I was saying, if you start with very thin current sheet and the final inflow-outflow thickness has to be finite, then there has to be some period of time when the current layer expands, and it expands by, turbulence eating away from the material. And I'm going to investigate this particular case. So for various reasons, I cannot investigate this case. But I will be arguing that they are fairly similar and probably have the same reconnection rate, although I cannot prove it. So I will be talking about this expanding current layer stage. My box will actually zoom in into the current layer so that it will appear as if it was infinite. So the box size will be periodic in all directions.
Sorry, could you explain what's the difference between 3 and 4? In 4, you have active inflow, in 3,
yeah, yeah. So here you cannot have appreciable inflow or outflow because the thickness is smaller than this equilibrium thickness.
But is there a reconnection rate or not?
Yeah, I will be arguing that.
That implying inflow?
Huh?
Doesn't reconnection rate non-zero implying inflow?
Not necessarily. So you have. You can define reconnection in various by various means, by electric field, and I will define it by inflow, and I will define it by mixing. I will explain it a bit later. It will be a mixing rate.
At the moment there is reconnecting electric field, there is inflow.
Yeah, local inflow. There's locally always inflow. So I'm using this setup where it's full periodic, so I need to have two current layers, so just forget about the second one, although I average statistics over both of them. So you have a thin current layer which becomes unstable, and then it starts mixing the fluid between top and down. This is how I will define reconnection rate. So this is just an image from MAG simulations. And it shows you what geometry looks like. So I always apply mean field. So there is always appreciable mean field. So in some simulations, I did very strong mean field. And in MHZ, when you go to strong field limit, you can argue that reconnection rate will actually go to a constant. So when you zoom in and into this MHZ simulation, you will see that.
Sorry, what was the initial condition? Did you add turbulent by hand?
So initial condition is that the current layer has to be very thin to be unstable, a few grid cells. So it is always constant thickness in terms of grid cells. And the initial perturbation is just white noise everywhere in the box. And
was it very average sheet in the beginning?
Average sheet, yes. Hyperbolic tangent or something. So there's white noise in the beginning on a very low level, like 10 to the minus 6. So first it will develop instabilities, and The dominant instabilities here are oblique tearing. And then they quickly start, because you introduce perturbations on all scales, they quickly start being nonlinear and mix and produce this turbulence.
But hold on, you have numerical resistivity in the coverage.
Yeah.
Or you have explicit resistivity.
So only explicit resistivity.
And so with that explicit resistivity, what's the Lundquist number that you're starting with?
This is of order of few 10 to the 4.
And is this really a hair sheet? I mean, you have a guide field, so do you have a density modulation? Variation?
No, this is incompressible, so you don't need to change mean field in the layer. Mean field is constant throughout the box, it's not changing in the layer. The pressure is infinite, so it compensates for any kind of difference in pressure in inside and outside of the layer.
So this is not an MHD in the usual sense, then? Is this
an incompressible?
So far, I'm showing you MHD results. This is incompressible MHD.
Incompressible in
HD. Yeah. So you start with this white noise and you don't see anything here because it's very low level, but because it causes instability, the inside the layer, it produces this turbulence, and initial conditions are mostly erased. So you can see a little bit of the original layer here, but it's usually erased. And overall, this thing looks turbulent. And you don't see what people call islands. So, my motivation in doing this was that you have this very very simple setup, you know, infinite planar current layer, and some very small initial perturbations, and let's see what happens. So there's some magnetic energy in the system and. Maybe it wants to dissipate, maybe not. Few 10 to the 4. So there are it is published, so you can look up the table. But it is in resistive MHD in simulations with normal resistivity, that was a little bit above the threshold of instability. Maybe like. 4 times higher than is required for the tearing instability to work.
But is this the scale was resolved with a few grid cells?
So these are simulations which are fully resolved, which means this is pseudo-spectral code which has exponential precision with grid size. So at some point. Your precision is good enough. In other words, you reproduce faithfully what's going on in physical MHD, resistive MHD, resistive viscous MHD. So these simulations are well resolved. So this is true viscous resistive MHD without any numerical effects in some sense.
So if you did it in 2D, would you have seen the tearing islands? Or I'm just trying to relate this to other work, other MHD work, like what Nuna.
Yeah. So of course, in 2D, you would see the same as Nuno. I mean, his 2012 paper, I think, is it's not incompressible, but it's probably high beta, right, or not? I don't remember. In any case. Yes, in 2D you see islands simply because of the geometry. So you can define islands as points between, as areas between two X points. So there are separatrices. You can formally define islands, but in 3D.
But some 3D pictures all sort of show the same thing as you're showing, right? You don't see a very clear one X point. You just see a bunch of flux ropes.
Well, yeah. If you go to ParaView and you try to draw something that resembles, here Bill did not start these field lines everywhere. He started in a few points and then he observed these flux ropes, and then how statistically this is representative for the whole box, I don't know. I mean, if you want to see flux ropes, you will see flux ropes. If you don't if you don't want to see flux ropes here.
Well, but I mean, just qualitatively, this doesn't look that different from Hughes simulation. Or are you claiming that it is?
Yeah, so no, it looks very similar. So if you look at the slice,
right.
His slice and my slice,
right.
I mean, it's not, well, I mean, he has this big plasmoid where everything collects.
That's periodic mountain. Yours is bigger scale, of course.
But also periodic.
Anyway, so this is different equation. This is for MHD equations. And
Andre, when you say MHD and plasma don't agree, mm-hmm. you really mean that, right? You mean they appear to exhibit different physics?
No, I'm saying that some people argue that MHD and plasma are qualitatively different because whenever you have discontinuities in magnetic field, that means you have a current layer, and this current layer which have a reconnection rate which is associated with plasma effects on small scales, not any MHD resistivity or anything like that, which means that MHD is not a truthful representation of plasma on large scales as long as you have current layers. This is what some people claim.
Surely resistivity comes in before the eye.
Yeah. So sometimes it is okay when you have, for example, collisional media. In collisional media, you can derive MHD rigorously, and then there's rigorous derivation.
So it's a question of which is for him, which set of equations applies to.
Yeah. So on the sun in particular, you cannot rigorously derive MHD.
I see.
So
well,
So I will be introducing just one plasma effect. So there's still mostly MHD, but I'm adding this term. It is simplest formulation of whole MHD, and it basically is telling you that magnetic field is frozen into electrons. So there's now two fluids, electron and ion fluid, and ion fluid is moving with velocity v, and electron fluid is moving with velocity v minus dij, where di is ion skin depth, but in this case just a parameter of the problem. And also I will be evolving passive scalars, so I will be evolving passive scalar for ions and electrons separately to see how they behave. So I have this current layer, and it's turbulent, has many x points, there are inflows, outflows, there is a reconnection in one direction and the opposite direction. So it's very hard to tell what is exactly reconnection rate if you want to formulate it in terms of inflow and outflow. So instead, remember I showed the picture with x point. This is the next slide. So I will define it as mixing rate. So basically, there are some particles coming in here and in here, and here you don't know which way they go. So this area is mixed. This rate of production of the mixed fluid, I will define it as a reconnection rate. And this is, to my knowledge, the most sort of general way to define a reconnection rate. It was suggested by Bill Dotton, and I just picked it up. So this was also sort of a...
Your previous slide, you introduced these quantities phi.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the vorticity, or what is it?
Passive scalar. It is arbitrary scalar, which
okay,
is transported.
So it's not vorticity, then. Something.
This is an equation for passive scalar,
okay,
so it can be anything. So
it
could be anything that is passively transported. In my case, I always set it to 1 and minus 1 in the area above the current layer and below the current layer. So it is, in some sense, just 1 minus 1. And mixed fluid is something that's not 1 or minus 1. Okay, it was also interesting what you can do in terms of numerics, how far you can go in terms of ion skin depth. So peak simulations are expensive. So I was thinking maybe whole MHD simulations can go to larger box sizes. So I was able to go to box sizes of 500 di, which I think is pretty large. So I had this pseudo-spectral code, it solves all these different kind of equations. Basically, whole MHZ is pretty much the same as MHZ, except for it has this extra term. So one big difference between whole and MHZ is that the time step is requirement is different. So this code is reasonably fast, 1 microsecond per step per cell. You can go to fairly high, large data cubes, you can reach about a fraction of a petaflop on BlueJNQ machines. You can go to...
Why is it called that?
What is called?
Why is it called that?
Icarus?
But it's a
1 terabyte,
right?
Is that it is a speak. So when you replace letters with numbers, it is a special thing that hackers do, and in order to make their And of course you can Google it very easily because it's not just Icarus. So you can go to higher petaflops, but then you'll be wasting computer time. But this is a sort of a reasonable point. So earlier I did this MHZ-driven simulations, 4,000 cube, I invite you to try to analyze them. Just email me and I can send you the data. There's also various measurements from these simulations which are public. And you can download them. There are Python scripts to play with them. Now I got this new allocation, 52 million hours, and what do you do with it? So there is a whole MHZ is of course a much harder problem than this because you have to make much more time steps. So in my case, I reduced the box size in the direction perpendicular to the layer by a factor of 2. I still have 2 layers, and I still need the space for the current layer to grow. Basically, you take about 1 million time steps, and the combination of steps and nodes is 10 to the 16, 3 10 to the 16. So maybe it's a petascale or whatever. What we can deduce from this?
So unlike Icarus, this code doesn't burn up when it tries to fly high, right?
I'm not sure that this is high. I mean, this is large.
This is the mid-level that...
This is being large.
When you say nodes, do you mean the real space collocation points?
Real space, yes. Fourier space is smaller.
Is this using FFTs?
Yeah. So this is there's a special FFT procedure, which is called P3D FFT. Written by Dmitry Pikurovsky, and he highly optimized it. And it's actually pretty fast, not only on large data cubes, but also on small ones. So it does 2 transpositions, and it is cache conscious, so that it makes sure that this memory access that does not inhibit your computation.
But does it scale across nodes? Like, does it use,
is
it like FFTW? How does it scale in parallel? Because it's an FFT transform.
Yeah. So it does transpositions. Like, there's a data cube which is divided in pencils, in 2-dimensional pencils, which sits on each node. So in order to do a Fourier transform in one direction, first you do Fourier transform in the local direction, then in order to make it in the different direction, you have to transpose your data cube. And this involves sending all the data at once over all the cluster. So in principle, this is very bandwidth demanding. But nevertheless, on BlueJNQ, the amount of time spent on this transposition procedures was about 60% compared to 40% which went on computation. So and on smaller scale, on smaller data cubes, it is a smaller portion, so it's like 50% or 40%. So it's, I would consider it's a reasonably efficient code, and because the computation itself takes very little time, basically the Fourier transform itself is n log n, and log n is still a small number compared to what people do in more complex codes, Godunov codes. There's a lot of computation per cell. So it is reasonably fast, and it can compete with codes that make much less communication. Anyway, so these are slices of this phi quantity, so passive scalars for ion and electron, and one and minus one, so the red is one and blue is minus one. This is current layer, and in the middle you see green, which is a mixed fluid. And what you can see is that there's a lot of mixing, and there's a lot more mixing in electron fluid compared to ion fluid. And this is what you would expect in a Hall reconnection, because in Hall you have this. Maybe I'll go back to this. So imagine that you're deeply in the Hall regime, and ion skin depth is much larger than the size of this box. In this case, ions will be stationary, and all these motions will be just electrons, and electrons are very light. So it's much easier to move electrons around and mix them. Okay, so I also track this surface of when this passive scalar is zero. In this case, this is electron mixing surface. So I called it the mixing surface. Essentially, this is the surface where most of the mixing occurs. And what is shown here is the surface itself. The color is a strength of the gradient. So it basically shows the largest gradient is where the mixing occurs. And these lines are just some carefully chosen magnetic field lines. I don't know if they demonstrate anything. So this is a bigger view, and you would see some sort of large scale X-like features, which is characteristic for Hall MHZ reconnection. And when you zoom in, you will see that these big features are actually pretty messy and turbulent, and so the surface is very complicated. So this is certainly multi-scale, like this fits perfectly into the definition of this workshop. Anyway, you can look at energies, at energy spectra, and the energy spectra, perhaps not surprisingly, look very much like driven turbulence. So even though I didn't drive anything, but this current layer being unstable and starting to mix produces this spectra. So just for those who are not familiar with Hall MHZ, above the ion skin depth scale, it works as MHZ, and below, you essentially are split between two modes. There are right circularly polarized whistlers, which are waves which, there's electrons stick to the magnetic field lines, and there are oscillations, very fast oscillations, because electrons are light. And there's ion cyclotron waves. For ion fluid decouples from magnetic field, so it has its own dynamics. And nobody knows what the slope of this dynamics is going to be, but I just put this minus 5/3. So for the whistlers, the sort of fiducial spectrum is minus 7/3.
Why does that, I thought it was just the power of k squared on top of. I know it's not showing that.
This case, k minus 2, you say?
I thought it's the same as kinetic alpha waves. So it's like an electric field spectrum. Isn't it supposed to be minus 3?
It has nothing. I'm sure that it has nothing to do with electric field, because there is no electric field in this code.
It's a velocity. Electric field is a velocity. U cross.
Okay. So this is a velocity spectrum, and So it's not equivalent to electric field spectrum, because U cross B is not equivalent to U. So I don't know what is electric field spectrum, U cross B spectrum. I didn't plot it, but for the velocity spectrum, it's pretty shallow. So it doesn't look anything close to minus 7/3. And for those of you who haven't heard of minus 7/3, so in this Hall MHZ equations, I introduced this new term. And basically, in this limit, when you go to very small scales, and you look only at electrons, then this is the only term that is important. And the term is di curl of j cross b. So the nonlinearity here looks like di k squared b squared. And I assume that b is in the same units as velocity. So the time scale will be something like so the rate will be di k squared b, and the length scale will be the time scale will be L, the characteristic scale squared divided by di divided by b. Okay, so this is different from standard Kolmogorov when it's just L over b or L over v. And because of that, so if you do the energy cascade argument, standard energy cascade argument, and here I'm assuming that Whistler's become so anisotropic, just like Alvin waves. There's the same picture. Whistler's become very anisotropic. They hit critical balance. The cascade is strong. Therefore, it has to be determined by standard strong cascade formula, basically Kolmogorov formula. So you have something like b cube over L squared di proportional to epsilon. Epsilon is the dissipation rate. So basically your b scales L as L to the 2/3. And this this is a scaling which is correspond to a spectrum of -7/7.
So what's the Hue scaling corresponding to this?
The same. So sorry, there's no U scaling. There is, the velocity is not involved. The only dynamics.
So when you plot the green curve, are you plotting J or what are you plotting? The green curve.
The green curve.
The green curve, which you say are right-handed Whistler's. Is that?
This is just magnetic field. So I'm.
So that's magnetic field.
Yeah. So I'm lazy here. So I did not extract ion cyclotron and Whistler's. I'm just saying that. On small scales, Whistler's dominate magnetic perturbations, and ion cyclotron dominate velocity.
B, velocity.
Yeah. So this is kinetic red and magnetic green.
I think I can probably help you with the velocity field because what happens is that if you do extract, if you rewrite your equations for KDI large. In such a way as to separate high frequencies and low frequencies, which are the Whistler frequencies and the ion cyclotron wave frequencies, you find that there are two components to your turbulence. One is this magnetic one, the other is the ion cyclotron waves, which are actually just velocity.
Yeah.
Right? And if I remember right, they do actually pretty much minus 5/3.
Minus 5/3. Some people claim that, but I wasn't convinced.
What you basically get for the ion cyclotron waves, interestingly, is more or less a hydrodynamic equation. It's an electrostatic kind of turbulence. Of those things, and it's low frequency.
So maybe. So in Whistler's, only this term is important, so forget about this term is zero. Only this term is important, so it's essentially only the dynamics of magnetic field. And this is called electron MHD, and electron MHD gives you this scaling if you assume that the turbulence is strong.
So in this picture of the tracers, the turbulence is spatially confined to the inner leg.
Very good question. So unfortunately, I don't have a picture of velocity perturbations. But this is different from MHD in that Whistler's can actually escape out of the current layer. So in MHD case, Alvenic waves propagate along field lines, so they're stuck within the current layer. They cannot get out. But in whole MHD case, Whistler's have this dispersion relation that is essentially group velocity can be at some angle with the magnetic field and then can escape, and then they populate all this empty space, and this will have some consequences on what I will show, although not hugely important.
So if you were to plot velocity and magnetic field fluctuations, they would be falling and
so they will concentrate mostly in the layer, so they will be around here, but there will be sizable amount of perturbations in between, just waves. So they will look like Whistler waves.
So that low K, your spectra will be dominated by these current layers that were put in.
Yeah, so all the spectra are dominated only by current layers. The amount of energy in the empty regions are relatively small compared to the total. So all this spectra is this are two-dimensional spectra, first of all. So I'm not going in.
All right, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. So like if you do three-dimensional spectra, you would have a signature of the current layer, and I don't want that. So this is just two-dimensional spectrum.
May I ask, if you calculate the amount of magnetic energy flowing through this magnetic spectrum, the magnetic energy flux versus kinetic energy flux, do you know what that ratio is?
No, I didn't measure that. But my guess is that on large scales, magnetic flux will dominate. Because just because magnetic energy is above. On small scales, I'm not sure. So in MHD case, when you go to dissipation range, but basically the spectra converge and the dissipation is 50-50 between kinetic and magnetic. And this is, of course, you can say that this is an artifact of me choosing Prandtl number of unity.
No, that's okay.
Anyway, so...
So the reason I asked this question is because this is another one of these problems where you can actually show that on the level of fluid dynamics, you can decide the energy partition between species. You can show in this problem that the Whistler energy will all go into electrons.
Uh-huh.
And the ICW in ion sector wave energy will all go into ions. Which the proxy for which in this flow is if you calculate the flux of kinetic energy, that's your ion heating. And if you calculate the flux of magnetic energy, that's your electron.
Yeah, it's very easy to get dissipation, magnetic or kinetic dissipation.
Yeah, yeah,
I just didn't do it.
Yeah, yeah, just measure that. But I'm saying this is very, very nice because this is a way, so you know, people talk about energy partition and reconnection heating and so on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So in this problem, this is the way to solve this problem. You don't need quantum physics to solve. I mean, you don't need kinetics to solve.
I'm glad that you're so enthusiastic, but usually people tell me that, of course, HOLMHD is not representative for plasmas, what are you talking
about? Well, neither is any of the other models, so that's okay.
So anyway, let's move on. So I should mention that I did two series of simulation, and they differed by the ratio of DI to the box size, or actually DI to the grid size. So there's a high DI simulation, which is more whole MHD than MHD, and there's a more MHD-like simulation. And this will be important later for the rate. So I showed you the surface, so this mixing surface, and it is it has this complicated structure, and you can measure its fractal dimension. And I would argue that it's actually multifractal, so on small scales, it is one dimension. On large scales, it is a different dimension. So this also tells you that, yeah, this is multi-scale problem. There's different physics on different scales. And that mixing itself is also sort of scale dependent. So you can define mixing large scales and small scales. Nevertheless, I'm measuring the total mixing. So. Okay, so when you just plot this mixing rate, you would see something like this, and there's this fiducial value of 0.1 VA, and all plots seem to be consistent with this value. However, if you just take the measurement, and now you plot, so you already had some layer at some point of time. You already has some amount of mixed layer, and this is what I call W. It is a width of the layer. And this is essentially also time. So when time goes on, the width increases. So I'm plotting on the x-axis, this is a width of the layer divided by the ion skin depths. And on on the y-axis, it is rate in units of Alvinic speed. So this fiducial value of reconnection rate of maybe like 12% or 15% is here.
So I meant, what's VR? Is that the rate at which W is increasing, or what is it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. The rate at which W is increasing.
Yeah. So this is this is a characteristic value of the reconnection of this mixing rate, which I also call reconnection rate. And the red and blue are these two the simulations with different ratio of DI over grid size. So you can also think of grid size as electron scale, because that's where I dissipate energy and make sure that nothing goes below. So basically, this is, you can interpret these simulations as simulations with different mass ratio. So the red ones is a high mass ratio, the blue ones is a low mass ratio. So they differ when the layer width is very small, the rates are very different from these two cases. But at some at layer width of the several DI, they converge into this sort of standard value that people observe. And it's also sort of flat. So I believe that what people measured before is at all in this regime. So they waited for some characteristic time, and they saw this rate, and they saw that this is it. But when you go to higher and larger and larger widths, then I would argue that in this turbulent picture, you would have larger and larger scale separation between turbulent scale and microscopic reconnection scale, and maybe the turbulence will become relatively more and more important compared to microscale physics. So, and you see this mixing rate is decreasing. So it is important to have several box sizes, because this will give you information on how this whole thing depends on scale. So remember that my setup was completely scale-free, except for everything was connected to the grid size. So I do white noise, which is grid size scale perturbations, and I did current layer, initial current layer, which is grid size this. So when you do larger boxes, you essentially physically do larger boxes. So what happens is that, of course, with very large boxes, you cannot go away that far in time. But now you can compare the result between the large box and small box. And I will just zoom in this area. So these triangles are a smaller box, and the circles are a larger box. So what happens is that the rate in a larger box is higher than in the smaller box, and because everything is determined by the grid scale. So this is a really like the effect of going to larger and larger current layer sizes. So since I consider planar current layer, I would like to see what is going to happen at infinity, right? So the deviation between these box sizes is pretty small. It's about 4% in the rate. So I would argue that I may have already sort of saturated in terms of box sizes. And this rate is decreasing. So what happens with ions? So remember, I showed this picture with X point, and I was saying that just electrons are moving and ions are stationary. And this is true for some initial moment of time. But then when there's more and more motions, there is more and more turbulence, the ions become more and more involved to the motions. And this is the same plot, but now for this ion mixing rate. And you can see that the higher the width, the higher the rate is, and then it goes approximately at the same dependence as electrons. So this line was a fit from electrons. And the ion rate is here. It is still lower, but not by much. So I'm saying that in this large-scale reconnection picture, now that you have a scale separation between the layer viz and ion skin depths, ions and electrons has to behave approximately the same way because it becomes MHD fluid. But the main point here is that the people believed that it will never look like MHD fluid. It will always be on microscopic reconnection, which will involve only electrons, and then ions will be just staying there. But it seems like when you increase the vis, not only you decrease the reconnection rate and slowly approach the fluid MHD fluid rate, but also the ions and electrons are mixing at approximately the same rate. Okay, so I will summarize. So I think now there is no doubt that spontaneous reconnection, when you just set an unstable current layer and let it go at high Lundquist number, is a fast reconnection, or in plasma, is a fast reconnection. And there is a certain reconnection rate, dissipation rate per unit area. But there is different approaches to this. And some people claim that this fast reconnection is because the physics on microscales is different. This plasma physics, and there is this point of view when you argue for fast reconnection because your large scales are determined by turbulence, which is stochastic, and small scales are unimportant because turbulent locality. So the interactions are local in scale, and therefore large scales don't even know about small scales. So large scales have their own dynamics, and reconnection rate, global rate, of course, is determined by large scales. So in plasma, the turbulent layer is also turbulent. So you can ask this question whether this is a reconnection is a small scale effect or a turbulence effect. So what I observed is that this mixing layer is bifractal, so it has whole MHD scales when it is wrinkled in some way, and it have MHD scales when it's wrinkled in a different way. So this whole MHD connection reached about the current layer viz of 25 di, and I showed that the rate decreases and it becomes quite below the standard value of 0.1, which is observed in whole MHD. So if you want some conjecture, you would argue that at the current layer viz of 10 to the 4 di, maybe it will go to the fluid rate, and maybe the fluid rate is what is happening in the solar corona. So we don't know for sure, but theory, which is turbulence locality, suggests that this is going to happen. So also numerics suggests that ion and electron rates converge, which is good news for single fluid MHD models. So if on large scales, even in reconnection case, plasma behaves like a single fluid, then why have many fluids? So I guess that's it. Any questions?
Doesn't point about small reconnection rate contradict what we want from observations?
No. So observations are in some range. So typically it's between 10% and 1%, or even 10 to the minus 3. So of course 10 to the minus 3 will be very hard to explain even from fluid viewpoint. But any rate between 10% and 1% is well within the observation constraints.
Well, so in MHD, this value of 10 to the minus 2 is associated, as far as I understand it, with the critical Lundquist number of an interplasmoid sheet. So there is a kind of a, well, you can argue why it is that this number is what it is.
Uh-huh.
Right? So in what would be the argument in this case for any of these numbers?
Yeah, so basically I think that you can view this 10 to the minus 2 in two-dimensional case as the confirmation of this hierarchical plasmoid thing. But I don't think...
Information may be too strong, if it's consistent with...
Yeah, consistent with... but I don't think it applies in fully turbulent three-dimensional case. So what it has to do is simply this... Oh, well, you can look up my paper. So basically, this rate has to do with some Kolmogorov constants and some Alvin ratios. So you can derive this 1% completely independently from any Turing instability threshold. You can derive it from properties of turbulence.
You derive it when you say Kolmogorov constants and so on. Mm-hmm. In order to derive it, you have to first measure those Kolmogorov constants.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So in some sense, you can derive it in terms of something else you can't derive.
Yeah, yeah. So you're not using standard Kolmogorov constants, standard Alvin ratio from
right,
given turbulence.
Right, right,
you
right.
use particular constants which are derived from this current layer-driven turbulence. So turbulence...
No, but is that not just a proxy for measuring this rate directly?
No. Why? I mean, these things are not connected at all. So there's just perturbations, and they have particular ratio between kinetic and magnetic energies, and they have particular ratio in terms of energy flux versus energy content. And this has nothing to do with reconnection. This has nothing to do even with mixing.
Well,
so you can
have a lot to do with reconnection. Yeah. The whole thing is driven by reconnection, right?
Yeah. So we hypothesize that turbulence drives reconnection, but how do you prove it? So
why do you think there is this an expression of non-universality, the fact that you get different constants? Is it truly truly a different turbulence?
In the paper it's just a number. So
yeah, yeah, but in your interpretation of all this, right, you've just said, oh, you can't just use Kolmogorov constants from, standard driven solutions.
Yeah, of course.
Is it truly a different turbulence? On all scales.
Yeah, the Kolmogorov Kolmogorov constant may be different. Yeah, for different types of drive and for different components. So when you have driving which is purely magnetic driving, so essentially you have reconnecting field lines which become Alvinic waves. Of course, magnetic energy dominates. It dominates by a factor of 10 at least, or 20, or I don't remember. So. Of course, there's some constant in there, but so what happens is that whatever happens on small scales, whatever universality is going on small scales, it's not even important for the total rate, because what is important for the global rate is your properties of turbulence on larger scales, and these are highly non-universal. So you can have decaying turbulence, which has a dominant magnetic energy. You can have driven turbulence when there's equipartition between kinetic and magnetic. So you can have different types of turbulence which look differently on large scales. So we are not talking about universality on small scales, because the small scales...
Are Kolmogorov constants, which tend to be viewed as universal things.
Yeah, yeah. So maybe Kolmogorov constant is not a correct term. So it is sort of a large-scale Kolmogorov constant or something like that. Uh-huh.
So Bill Doughton gave a talk at the meeting when he was here.
Uh-huh.
And he argued that that if you look at reconnection inflow, that the turbulence that gets generated cannot sustain itself and prevent the collapse to very small scales. Now, if you look at your simulation and you look at that current layer, there are regions where everything is ballooning out, and there are also regions where it's extremely narrow.
Uh-huh.
So I guess my question is, and you've done some analysis in which you define some average width of the layer.
Uh-huh.
But it's also clear, I think, from some of the stuff you showed, that in some regions the current layer actually becomes very narrow. So so the question is, do these regions where the current layer becomes narrow sort of limit how fast the energy can be released in this whole thing? Or they play no role at all? Which you seem to imply they play no role at all because you don't even talk about them.
Yeah, so basically when you go to later and later times, this narrow areas disappear. So there's no longer, like, I have a periodic box, so matter that does not have any way to escape. It just stays there. But people did simulations with large imposed perturbations. So when you impose large scale perturbation, then your dynamics decides that this will be my large plasmoid where all the matter flows into, and this will be my thin layer where, you know, reconnection happens. So I didn't do it because that seemed to me an artificial thing to do. So this setup with a planar layer and the white noise perturbation seem like a very simple setup to start with, and then you can argue what difference geometry may bring. Now, if you repeat the simulations with inflow and outflow, the result may be different. And some people in the magnetospheric community are arguing that it will be qualitatively different. So there will always be an X point, there will always be plasmoids forming from this X point, and so on and so forth. So this has to be checked.
I think the answer is clear on that. Yes, that is, there are very narrow layers, and they see this.
I'm not fully convinced. I mean, first of all, people never went to such large boxes as this simulation. So
no, I'm talking about observations.
The observations.
Yeah,
So observations is a tricky thing. So if you want to see plasmoids and you look at the sun all the time,
no, finally you magnetosphere.
Oh, magnetosphere.
Yeah,
fine.
That's clear. The data is clear on that.
Yeah. So in magnetosphere, actually DI is not that small compared to the system size. So maybe even these simulations have already reached larger scales compared to magnetospheric layer.
So the first plot you showed, which was from your very early MHC simulations,
mm-hmm.
you did see these regions of very narrow current layer. But I think what you're saying is in the Hall MHD, the ones you're reporting on now, you're saying you don't see those very narrow current layers.
No. I think in terms of turbulence in the layer and the sort of the structure of the layer, I don't see, you know, qualitative difference between MHD and Hall MHD. So, you know, this is a confined layer, and it grows in time because this reconnection events have outflows, but the outflow cannot go anywhere, so they collide and they form this larger layer. So I do not have any thinning because there's no reason for the for plasma to form, you know, strong inflows. So there's the outflows are confined, so there will be no global inflows. There will be local inflows. So I had this slide. I don't have it here, but you can plot. It's in the paper, I think. You can plot inflow and outflow velocities in the box, and you see this inflow regions everywhere, and but they are small scale. So there's no global inflows and outflows. There's no global thinning of the current layer. So what Bill was talking about is that I think he had a bias. So basically he wanted to see large scale inflow because that's how he defined reconnection, and that's how when you see in the current layer and you start seeing this X point and violent outflows, then he's saying this is a reconnection. But in principle you can have sort of a more quieter reconnection, and which sustains itself, so there's no driving involved.